Check it, check it, check. 1, 2. All right. Let's do this. Greetings, friends and enemies. It's been a while since I cast because I've been working my ass off. And then got the first day off and all I did was essentially nothing because I was just fucking mentally, more mentally than physically exhausted. Then the second day off, that was yesterday, which was Thursday, I was going to record, but then I just said, fuck it, because I have this to-do list that has amassed over the past 3 weeks of all these things I needed to take care of. You know, personal life shit, because I have a fucking life. I have to buy, you know, do things, buy groceries, clean house, so far. So I just said, no casting. I'm going to try to get through the to-do list, which I worked on for an entire day and made almost no impact on. I'm like, how the fuck did I do all of this stuff? I didn't sit down all day long, did you? And it's like nothing's done. What the fuck is going on? So yeah, here we are. It's recording time. Don't forget the ever-present, the most likely third possibility. You are wrong, and I am right. Go fuck yourself. What is it? Oh, this is Stating the Obvious podcast, weapons platform from which I launched the cruise of the land to like homes and destroy super muffins and stays all around the world. It's, what time is it? It's almost 9 a.m. It is the 12th of May. I knew it was one of those months. One of those months that has a vowel in it. It's the 12th? 15th? 12th. 12th. We're having a rough time here at the Cynical Libertarian Society this morning. It's the 12th of May in the year of our Lord, the Trump and Fiora, 2017. I am the Great One himself, founder of Cynical Libertarian Society on the internet since 1999, podcasting for 12 years. In the control room, the lovely and adorable Randy. You can find us on the interwebs, cynlibsoc.com, on the interwebs, and of course, the email address, if you want to send me feedback, is God. Dog spelled backwards, God, at cynlibsoc.com on the interwebs. Speaking of that, at 8:30, had an email show up. I mean, less than 30 minutes ago, this email popped up. Somebody anonymous sent me a message via God at cynlibsoc.com on the interwebs. He said, the internet is not the answer, but maybe a decentralized one is. And then he pointed to the website dnn.media, which I clicked on, and it doesn't work. There's no website there. Maybe it's temporarily down. Maybe he mistyped the domain name. I don't know. I'll check it out again later. He also sent a link to a Pinterest board that has pictures of volleyball girls on it. You can't go wrong with that. See, now that's how you suck up to the Great One, okay? Pictures of volleyball girls. Way to go, brother. I'm assuming it's a brother, not a sister. Maybe a sister sent me some pictures of some volleyball girls. It could happen. If you're a cute sister, you should send me pictures of yourself. So, yeah, I've been working. All right, I want to get back. Speaking, and it's funny because I want to get back to the internet is not the answer. I have a whole fucking 3 pages of notes of just random things I want to talk about. And we'll see how fast I can stop tangenting and get back to the book. But I've been pretty much working for about the last 3 weeks, and I went through another reason phase. So I went to the grocery store yesterday, and I saw, like, real girls again. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what girls look like. It was really cool. So that's the girls. And then I got girl stories to tell you, none of which will be a surprise. They're all flaky, but that can wait. Also, I want to throw shout-outs to, thank you to Aaron Clary for linking to the podcast. He linked to the episode where I ripped Chris Johnson a new asshole, where he's talking about bicycles, urban planning, which I also want to talk more, this is not going to be this episode, about the urban planning thing. I have ranted about the urban planning thing in the past, many, many years ago. This is one of those things that I don't even talk about anymore because I'm pretty sure I'd fucking beat it to death, right? Urban planning, utilitarianism, global warming, which I still can't believe you people are so fucking dumb you still believe this. I mean, I thought I had beat those 3 things to death and they never needed to be talked about ever again. But apparently people still think urban planning works. People still think utilitarianism is a great fucking philosophical way to make decisions. And people still believe in global warming, which goes to show never underestimate the stupidity of the human species. Anyway, there's more. And urban planning, this one crosses the boundaries. Black Pigeon. Black Pigeon. I just watched a couple of his videos where he's praising urban. And I'm like, it's like, normally this guy is pretty fucking intelligent and sane. But here's a fucking quote unquote right winger going off about how we need more urban planning and we need less automobiles. And anyway, I can't go down the path right now, but it just the stupidity of urban planning. Right wingers are not immune to this shit. All right. And then also shout out to the gang over at America.org. That's America spelled with a K. America.org. Appreciation to you guys. They linked to my podcast, the one about you shouldn't lie about things that can be objectively proven. Right? So that I forget what the title of the cast was. But anyhow, they linked to one of my podcasts also. So thank you to America.org. Thank you to Aaron Clary. Always appreciate it when people send traffic my way, because none of you have to do this. I know that everyone's doing this because they want to do it. And as an anarchist, I appreciate people doing what they want to do to help other people out. Yada, yada, yada. All right, let us just bypass all the other bullshit. Get into the book. Because now, all right, so we're back. We're going to finish this up eventually. There's probably going to be at least this podcast and two more talking about this book. And now I've got to get to the fucking ADHD book. Oh, fuck. And then I got, I'm tangenting. It's almost time for the college students to leave. I'm not sure, because I've been in the hole of working and then yada, yada, yada. I think this is finals week. I think the students will be leaving really soon. Yeah, it's going to be so nice. And what's going to happen here today is I'm going to record this episode, and then there's a really good chance I'm going to go trail running, possibly before I even publish this. I don't know. We'll see. So today's episode is going to be later than normal. Just deal with it. Then we're going to come back to the studio, and we're going to bump out a few more episodes today because I want to get a jump start. And I told you guys I was going to have 3 weeks off. Oh, fuck no. No rest for the wicked. I got more people sending me fucking emails going, hey, can you come and work for me, because we need you to create some value for us, and we'll give you some money in return because you don't have a Patreon account and you actually fucking do things for other people instead of cyber begging because you don't have a fucking YouTube channel. God, this fucking cyber begging. I thought I was done with it. I may have to do another podcast about the cyber begging. And if I do it, I'm going to be playing videos of people cyber begging and whining and then making fun of them. I'm not 100% solidified that I'm going to do it, but I'm really thinking about it because it's getting out of control. It's just getting out of control. The fucking whining. Guys, you've got to fucking grow up, and you've got to move on, and you've got to learn to adapt. Adapt and overcome. Okay? You have to fucking change. This Google fucking owes me advertising money thing. Google doesn't owe you a fucking thing. And this is the true patheticness when all these conservatives are like, yeah, look at those welfare parasites. Oh, well, who's the parasite now? You're sitting here. You've rested. I mean, these one people. So I'm watching their... I wasn't going to talk about this. I'm watching this fucking video where they're saying, why, yes, we started this YouTube channel and this was our plan for making money. We put everything into the YouTube channel and this was going to be our career. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you fucking retarded? This is like going out and getting a job and then thinking you're going to have that same job for the rest of your fucking life. Guys, I have said it Other people have said it. Les Brown has said it. Guys, the gold watch days are over. This shit where you go and get one fucking job and you stay there for your entire life. You stay there for 40 years and they give you a gold watch and a pension. Those days are gone. And if you think YouTube is a fucking substitute for a career, you're even dumber than a fucking social justice warrior. You're dumber than a social justice warrior. YouTube is not a career. If you started a YouTube channel thinking that was going to be your source of income for the rest of your life, you are a fucking moron. I can't be any clearer than that. No Orwellian language. No code phrases. You're a fucking moron. Jesus Christ. How dumb can you people be? We know the answer to how dumb you can be. How dumb you can be is so fucking dumb that you think having a YouTube channel is a fucking way to make money. It's not. Those days, the boom days are over, okay? God damn it. You motherfuckers have got to let this shit go. And of course, what was their answer? Oh, we started a Patreon account. I have an idea. Why don't you fucking hippies get a job? Because there's a couple of hippies. I'm not saying that as a derogatory comment. They're a couple of hippies. I like, get a job, guys. Get a fucking job. All right. The internet is not the answer. Let's fucking get to this. The internet is not the answer. It's a book by Andrew Keen. I've been reading from it up to this point. I have agreed with him on many things because this is a good book. There's many things in here that he is right about. There are many things in here he is wrong about. We are now going to start approaching the part of the book where his brain starts to shut down and he begins getting stupid. Let the games begin. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting close. We'll see how far we get. All right, we're on page 142. Web 2.0 was supposed to democratize media. Here's your first problem. You're assuming that democracy is a good thing. Okay, if democracy was a good thing, explain bombing 7 countries in 6 years. If democracy is so fucking wonderful, explain Obamacare. If democracy works, explain the war on drugs. Everybody, well, we're going to democratize. No. There's your first fucking mistake. That's your first fucking mistake. Let us not democratize anything. How about we have a meritocracy? Oh, but we can't have a meritocracy because then all the fucking losers will continue to be losers. Hang on 1 minute. The great one's going to blow his fucking nose, but he's not going to blow his nose into the microphone. Sure, you really needed to know about my bodily functions, but there it was. Oh, and I am drinking coffee from Black Rifle Coffee Company. This one is a medium roast, and it is called Coffee or Die. It's pretty damn good. It's not as good as Murdered Out, though. Murdered Out. Oh my God. It's like drinking velvet. It's like drinking black velvet that has Elvis Presley painted on it. Black Rifle Coffee Company. Find it. Buy it. Tell them the Great One sent you. They don't advertise here, but if enough people say, hey, the Great One sent me, maybe they'll pay me for advertising. Then I won't need a Patreon account because I can actually create value for other people, right? God forbid. All right, where are we? We're 15 minutes into the podcast. Maybe I should get started. And it is shaping up to be beautiful outside. Oh my God, trail running is going to be so good today. I am excited. Web 2.0 was supposed to democratize media and empower those historically without a voice. Empower those historically without a voice. Can you guess where this might be going? So yes, anyone can now post on Twitter, Tumblr, and Pinterest. Some of us may even win the lottery and get retweeted or friended by what George Packer memorably described as one of the, quote, celebrity monuments of our age, unquote. And yes, we can post our ideas on the Huffington Post. Oh, how gay! Our videos on YouTube, where they won't be monetized and you're not going to get paid for it, you dumbass, and you'll probably get censored. Our photos on Instagram, where all the women are whoring at, and our music on Facebook, where feminists rule. And why would you? What, who cares? But there's no money in any of this for the vast majority of young writers, musicians, photographers, journalists, or filmmakers. No! No, there isn't! You're right! There's no money! It's mostly a gift economy where the only profits are being made by a tiny group of increasingly monopolistic internet companies.
I'm gonna go on the intertubes, cause there's no gatekeepers!
Right, Google is getting rich, Apple is getting rich, YouTube is getting rich, and you're giving your shit away for free.
Can you donate to my Patreon?
And I go look at your Patreon and you're getting $300 a month.
If they don't donate to my Patreon, this is all I have to live on.
How do you live on $300 a month? And this is the thing. When I hear these people on the YouTubes, I'm not going to talk about the YouTubes today. When I hear these people on the YouTubes and they're going on about how If I don't get enough money on the Patreon, you know, I have to go get a real job. This is my only source of income. And I go and look at their Patreon, and they're getting $300 a month. Like, I mean, either you have mastered minimalism that you can live on $300 a month, or you're using your credit cards and going into debt, or you live with your parents. Okay, back to the book. Let's see if we can actually get through more than three paragraphs in 52 minutes. Yes, it's a gift economy. The only profits are being made by the internet companies. Okay, yes, there remain successful digital publishing networks that actually pay their contributors, such as BuzzFeed. Okay, we're invoking BuzzFeed as an example of success. Such as BuzzFeed, the listicle-dominated, highly trafficked, quote, news, unquote, site. News is in quotes, as it should be when you talk about BuzzFeed, which, as Shoe on Head said, BuzzFeed is the ass cancer of the internet. That was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life when she said that. And it's true. BuzzFeed is the ass cancer of the internet. That raised $50 million from Andreessen Horowitz in August 2014, and that the writer Heather Haverskly describes as the, quote, apotheosis of American trivia-focused escapism served up with an overabundant garnish of trashy and cute and yass. Great. And yes, there are still creative superstars, Malcolm Gladwell and J.K. Rowling in books, Lady Gaga and Eminem in music, Glenn Greenwald and Andrew Sullivan in investigative journalism, there's an oxymoron, who are able to greatly profit from their talent. But in our networked economy of abundance, there is a growing chasm between this tiny group of global superstars and everybody else. Harvard Business School professor Anita Ellsberg defined this as a blockbuster economy, which, she says, is exaggerated by the internet's abundance of content. Quote, in today's markets, where, thanks to the internet, buyers have easy access to millions and millions of titles, the principle of the blockbuster strategy may be more applicable than ever before. Unquote. And this goes back to what I keep telling you. The internet has all this stuff on it, which is free, because nobody wants to pay for it. And so, yeah, you put your shit on the internet and you're hoping like hell somebody's going to give you money, but ultimately they're not, because the internet is free. The things on the internet are free. Quote, winners take all, unquote, mourns Robert Frank about a world dominated by a tiny aristocracy. Why can I not say this word? Aristocracy, thank you. A tiny aristocracy of creative artists. Now, if we're talking about Lady Gaga and Eminem, I wouldn't go so far as to use the words creative or artist. We could use the word freaks. Anyhow, then that says more about the people who pay for their money than anyway, moving on. Oh God! And then no tangenting. No, stop. Bad. Great one. Bad. No tangenting. Oh God! I want a tangent so badly. All right. Self-control. Self-control. Okay. It's the opposite of Chris Anderson's profoundly flawed theory of the long tail, with its nostalgic guff of a cottage industry of middle-class cultural producers all making a reasonable living from the digital economy. Right, that's what we all heard when this started happening, right? Oh, everybody can go on the internet, and everybody can sell their music, and sell their photography, and sell their art, and sell their writing, and oh my God, it's going to open all these avenues for all these people to make money. And once again, I say unto you, show me the people who are making a living on the internet. Show me the people who are actually buying a house, making a car payment, raising two children. Their wife can stay at home and not have to work, or their husband can stay and not have to work. Show me these people who are making that amount of money on the internet. Can you scrape by if you're a minimalist who lives at home with your parents with the money you make on the internet? Yeah, sure. If you have a part-time job. But are there people out there making $100,000 a year on the internet? Are there some? Of course, but not that many. As you may or may not know, depending how long you've listened to this podcast, I make websites for people. That's one of my side gigs. And I had this one person come to me and like, yeah, I'm going to make this website. It's going to be for old people and we're going to make all this money on it. And I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, because there's this other website. It's called the Doggington Post. You can go. He's like, yeah, the Doggington Post. They make like $10,000 a month on that website with advertising. And I'm thinking, dude, someone has fucking lied to you. There is no, you have to show me actual evidence that there's any website that the people running the website are selling $10,000 worth of advertising a month. I'm not buying it. I don't buy that. And this person just saying, he's going to throw this website up and he's going to put some pictures of old people on there. And he's going to put up a couple of articles about how old people should save money and how old people are awesome and old people rule. And that old people are just going to flock to this website. And then advertisers are going to give him $10,000 a month to advertise to a bunch of old people. And I'm thinking, you know what, buddy? It's a little bit fucking more difficult than that. You have no realistic sense of what the fuck is going on. The more abundant the online content, the more dramatic the contrast between the massive success of a few hits and the utter obscurity of everything else. Ellsberg notes, for example, that of the 8 million tracks in the iTunes Store during 2011, 94%, that's 7.5 million songs, sold fewer than 100 units, with 32% selling just a single copy. The recorded music tail is getting thinner and thinner over time, unquote. Ellsberg concludes, without a music, with that. quote, "the recorded music tale is getting thinner and thinner over time," unquote, Ellsberg concludes about a music industry dominated by fewer and fewer artists. And this, the part of my problem here is I don't pay attention to pop music, so it's hard for me to really gauge it. But those of you who listen to popular music, you tell me, are there a lot of new artists emerging? Because with all this, this is the thing, see, all this talent is being thrown against the wall. Go to a website like Jamendo, which is a music website that I listen to sometimes. There's all kinds of stuff on Jamendo. There's bands all over the place. There's all this music being created. But how many of them are making it to the point of not being obscure anymore? Once again, if the internet is going to... The lie we were told is that the internet was going to help everybody who did something creative, like musicians, to get their stuff out there. Great. Then how many bands can you name who are not like superstar bands that you hear on the radio? How many local bands, how many small bands do you know? In 2013, the top 1% of music artists accounted for 77% of all artist recorded music income, while 99% of artists were hidden under what one 2014 industry report titled, quote, "the death of the long tail," unquote, called, quote, "a persuasive shroud of obscurity," unquote. This has been caused in part by the increasing monopoly of online music retail stores like iTunes and Amazon. There's no gatekeepers on the internet. Yes, yes, there are, dumbass. And partly by consumers being subjected to the tyranny of an overabundance of choice. This income inequality in the industry is reflected in live music, too, where between 1982 and 2003, the revenue share of the top 1% of touring acts more than doubled, while the revenue share of the bottom 95% of artists fell in the same period by more than half. As The Guardian's Helene Livadel concludes about these trends, quote, "not only is the wider middle class in society shrinking, so is the musician middle class," unquote. The most serious casualty of the digital revolution is diversity. This 1% rule is now the dominant economic feature of every cultural sector. According to John E. Geller, the CEO of a prominent British literary talent agency, the old Pareto law of 80% of sales coming from 20% of writers is now more like 96% to 4%. Meanwhile, a 2014 British study revealed that 54% of conventionally published writers and almost 80% of self-published authors make less than $1,000 a year from their written work. The most serious casualty of the 1% economy in publishing is the disappearance of the mid-list, which, according to Colin Robinson, the co-publisher of the New York-based print-on-demand publisher OR Books, comprises pretty much all the new titles that are not potentially blockbusters. What this means, Robinson warns, is that publishers can no longer afford to gamble on obscure or offbeat titles, thereby once again narrowing rather than broadening the variety of young or new writers in whom they invest. Now, this is another big thing, because on one hand, there's lots of people who say unto you, go forth, young man, and self-publish, right? And I'm completely on board with that. This is again, one of these things where everybody wants to be where, hey, either the self-publishing is the greatest or going through the publishing house is the greatest. And the slightly more realistic, and by slightly more realistic, I mean the more realistic understanding is that both of them have advantages and disadvantages, okay? If you go through a big publishing house, you're going to have contracts and perhaps restrictions on what you do. maybe it's like musicians who don't own their own fucking music. I don't know that much about publishing. If you go through a publishing house, like, do you own your shit, or does the fucking publishing house be like, oh yeah, we have a copyright on that? I know. Okay, but if you go through a publishing house, you have to deal with bullshit. You have to deal with paperwork. You have to deal with contracts that may have clauses you don't like. There are many. You also, of course, you have to get accepted by them in the first place. So there's lots of hurdles and roadblocks and bullshits. The good part is that if they are willing to invest in you, they'll throw money at advertising for you. They'll do some things to help you out as well. Self-publishing? Sure, there's lots of, you can do what you want, when you want, how you want. The quality of your product is as good as you want it to be. But you have to do your own advertising. Okay? Neither is perfect. Let us jump ahead, page 149. And hey, there's always success stories, right? 50 Shades of Grey. All you gotta do is write some internet fiction about a woman being sexually abused by a handsome rich guy, and you'll get tons of money. Wait, that's not where... Oh, yeah, here's where I'm going. Page 149. Here we go. All right. Let the games begin. But just as the internet has added to economic inequality, so it has also compounded hatred toward the very defenseless people it was supposed to empower. Oh, as we slip into the social justice warrior lingo. And here Mr. Keene starts to go off the fucking deep end. Now, I do remember people telling me the internet was going to make us all rich. I don't remember anybody telling me the internet was going to empower people. Today's network, of course, didn't invent hatred. And much of the rage articulated on the internet would have existed whether or not Tim Berners-Lee had invented the web. But the internet has nonetheless become a platform for amplifying the views of what media critic Jeff Jarvis calls the, quote, plague of trolls, abusers, harassers, lunatics, imposters, and assholes online, unquote. I think that last part there was referring to Aaron Clary, who is the world's only professional asshole, assholeconsulting.com. And things are only getting worse. The internet, the New York Times Farhad Manjoo. He has a name like, his name is Farhad Manjoo. Okay, how can you take this person seriously? Farhad Manjoo warns, quote, may be losing the war against trolls, unquote. Oh my God, because the speed and chaos of social media provides these anonymous hooligans with the cover to distribute their poisonous messages. The faster that the whole media system goes, the more trolls have a foothold to stand on, explains Whitney Phillips, an academic expert on online bad behavior. He's an academic expert on online bad behavior. Is that something he has a PhD in? I'm an academic expert on online bad behavior. God damn it. Where do you dredge up losers like this? I bet the motherfucker has a Patreon account. All right. I'm going to do it. I'm going to fucking do it. Quote, they are perfectly calibrated to exploit the way media is disseminated these days, unquote. According to feminist writer and journalist Amanda Hess, women are no longer welcome on the internet. Oh my God, you poor little women's. You're so strong and you're so independent, but oh my God, you're just not welcome on the internet. I mean, you have feminist book, which caters to you. You have the entire fucking internet is geared towards providing a safe place for women and selling them shit that they don't need. And to fucking sit here and say, women are no longer welcome on the internet. Oh my God, you fucking whore. All right, hold on. Fuck. Come on, fucking computer. Don't make me kick your ass. Whoa. Oh my God. No fucking way. Is that her? Okay. Oh my God. All right. Okay. So first of all, I have to tattoo, of course. All right. Whitney Phillips. I thought Whitney Phillips was a man. I'm going to tell you, Whitney Phillips is actually kind of cute, as best I can tell from these photos. I don't know how old these photos are, nor do I know how much Photoshop is involved. She has a tattoo on her arm, but I'm not going to lie, man, she's actually kind of cute. I would hit on it, you know, see what happens. All right, Dr. Whitney Phillips holds a BA in philosophy from Humboldt State University and an MFA in creative writing from Emerson College and a PhD in English with a folklore structured emphasis. She didn't just double down on a worthless degree, she triple downed on a worthless degree. Philosophy, creative writing, and English with a folklore structured emphasis. Oh my God. Her book on internet trolls, This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things, examines the emergence and evolution of subculture trolling, an online behavior practice predicated on mischief, meme creation, and anonymity. Why can I not talk? In addition to her first monograph, Dr. Phillips has published numerous articles in peer-reviewed academic journals. Oh my goodness, she's published numerous articles! Has contributed several chapters to edited media studies volumes and is frequently interviewed by national news outlets on stories about online aggression. Oh my God. Dr. Phillips' teaching and research interests, both academic and creative, engage with the intersections of digital media and technological studies, communication studies, cultural studies, folklore studies, there's a lot of studying, but she's not getting any smarter, literary studies, and you knew this was coming, critical race, gender, and sexuality studies. She is particularly interested in creative approaches to nonfiction, like fake news, participatory cultures, such as affirmative action, ambivalent online behavior, such as censoring YouTube videos that you don't approve of, television, a dying media, so bad it's good fandoms, such as reality TV, computer-mediated communication, which is having your Facebook account removed, transgressive humor, is that like transsexuals? I don't know. And the myriad infrastructures, interpersonal, political, and technological, undergirding the culture industries. And that, my friends, is what bullshit sounds like. Holy fucking shit. Oh my god, that's not her. I was just looking for more pictures of her to see if I could confirm whether or not she's actually fuckable. Yeah, you can see she's hitting the wall in this picture. She's starting to get old. Since she was, when she was young, she was cute. I mean, not, I'm not saying she's not out of 10, but she was cute. All right, I'm glad I went down that path. That was worth it. Oh my god. Shut up, Whitney. Just shut the fuck up. According to feminist writer and journalist Amanda Hess, do I dare t- yes, let's do it. All right, here we go. Amanda Hess. Oh my god. She has a Twitter account, of course. Oh look, she has her, oh look, AmandaHess.org. She has, not only does she have her own website, she has a .org. Let's find the pictures. Amanda Hess, short hair and overweight. Did we need to know that? I mean, did we need to ask? Oh my god. Well, this, you shouldn't look overweight in this picture. Amanda Hess. Hi, I've reported on online cultures, teenagers, gender, and sex. Blah, 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 blah. I used to write about women and internet slight. Oh my god. Totally. Oh, look, I won awards for my stupid writing from people who don't matter. She got a Sydney Award. No one's heard of that. She got a Mira Award. What's that? A National Magazine Award. Ooh, 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 I'm so impressed. All right, what's your, oh, this is your bio. What are your, what, oh no, wait, where's her bio? I want to read about her awesome qualifications. Oh, why does she not have, like, the list of all the PhDs she has? It's not on here. All right, good God. Is this her? Amanda has a Twitter. She's hitting the wall. She may not have been, she has really short hair and she's hitting the wall. She may not have been completely unattractive when she was younger. All right, that was less fun because I didn't find anything about her education to make fun of. According to the feminist writer and journalist Amanda Hess, women are no longer welcome on the internet. As evidence, she points to the rageful tweets she has received, like, quote, happy to say we live in the same state. I'm looking you up, and when I find you, I'm going to rape you and remove your head, unquote. From men who have disagreed with her writing. Now, of course, we know that social justice warriors and feminists have never threatened to kill people. No, they would never do that. And, okay, so what? So you got one tweet that somebody sent you, and from this you have concluded that all women are not welcome on the internet. Maybe this just means you're not welcome on the internet. And furthermore, if you're so strong and independent, why can't you take that people abuse me verbally? Those of us who do that, we get attacked all the time. We survive it. Why can't you? Hess is far from alone in being stalked online by male sociopaths, psychopaths. When the political campaigner Caroline Credo Perez, hyphenated last name, tells you everything you need to know, petitioned the Bank of England To add Jane Austen's face to its banknotes, she received an avalanche of rape and death threats on Twitter, including such messages as, quote, all aboard the rape train, unquote, and, quote, I will rape you tomorrow at 9 p.m. Shall we meet near your house, unquote. Now remember, once again, let us remember that all of the men sending these alleged rape tweets, let us remember that all of these men have 12 years of public education, which is dominated by women. All of these men have mothers. Right? When you sit here and you point to men and you say how fucked up they are, look at what portion of a man's life, number one, is spent in contact with women, which is most of it, especially with the rise of single mothers. And then also ask yourself what portion of these men's life is spent on the fucking internet, playing computer games, not socializing with real humans, watching television because their parents don't want to take the fucking time out to do the work of actually raising their kids. And then ask yourself how many of these men sending these death threats, and I use the term men very loosely, are on medication for their personalities. Right? This notion that just because this dumb feminist cunt got one death threat or one rape threat on Twitter that women are not welcome and that all men are fucked up, which is where this is all going, of course. But then again, we can't hold women responsible for the way their male children are raised, can we? Because that would be sexist. When the technology blogger Kathy Sierra received death threats in 2007, she shut down her blog and withdrew from public life. Well, okay, because she's a fucking quitter. I mean, I've received a death threat. I didn't fucking shut down anything. I'm still waiting for this faggot to come and kill me. This was like 2 years ago. The faggot said, "I'm gonna bury you." It's on the website. It pops up in the header. I took a screenshot of it. I mean, you know, again, this is the difference. There's no difference between men and women. Yes, there is. When men get death threats, we're proud of it. We take screenshots of this and put it on our fucking websites. Hey, look how cool I am. People want to kill me. That's how fucking awesome I am. Yeah, fuck you. When women get death threats, I'm gonna go hide. While the Hess, Credo Perez, and Sierra stories have been well publicized, many thousands of other women are victims of a less well-known misogyny on blogs and other online forums. Oh my God, victims! They're all victims! Victimology. Indeed, a 2005 Pew Research report. Oh, we did a fucking opinion. We did an opinion poll. Pew Research report found that the proportion of internet users who participate in online chat groups dropped from 28% in 2000 to as low as 17% in 2005. Entirely because of women's fall off in participation. Because women don't talk enough in real life, they need to be on the internet talking also. I mean, okay, so what? Of course, what they want us to conclude is that all of these women stopped participating in online chat groups because they were being threatened with death and rape. Maybe they stopped participating in online chat groups because online chat groups are stupid. Maybe, and I'm sure some women stopped because they couldn't hack it, okay? Because someone told them they're a cunt and they ran away. Maybe some of the women stopped participating because they wanted to spend time with their children. Or they got a boyfriend. Or they got a job. Or they have some hobbies. Maybe some of those women just decided, I'm going to stop being a fucking loser. I have not participated in an online chat group since 1990-something. Okay, the last time I was in an online chat was back in the days of dial-up modems. Maybe some of these women just decided to stop being losers. But no, you're supposed to think that all of them ran away because they were being threatened with rape and murder. That drop-off that occurred during the last few years coincided with increased awareness and sensitivity to worrisome behavior in chat rooms. Worrisome behavior in chat rooms. Is that an Orwellian phrase for disagreeing with a woman? I bet it is. This pervasive misogyny has led some former internet evangelist. This pervasive misogyny has led some former internet evangelists, such as British author Charles Ledbetter, to believe that the internet is failing to realize its potential. Right, because you see, if someone disagrees with a woman, well, the internet is not realizing its potential. The potential of the internet is to force everyone to agree with women. Quote, "It's outrageous we've got an internet where women are regularly abused simply for appearing on television or appearing on Twitter. If that were to happen in a public space, it would cause outrage," unquote, Ledbetter said. Now, it's actually outrageous that we live in a world where women can get raped by Muslim immigrants in European countries, and the media can pretend that this is not happening. Women's need their little safe spaces. They need to be sheltered from criticism and dissent. And in real life, they tend to get that. On the internets, where everybody's interacting and nobody knows each other personally and nobody gives a shit about you, you're not going to get that. If that's what you want, you need to stick to things like Feminist Book, where you can block people and have people removed. But the interwebs, it's not a fucking safe space, guys. It's not a fucking safe space. All right, we're not finished with that section. There is way, way more about how the interwebs is discriminating against women, and we'll get to that.